This has been one of those mornings. The car breaks down on the way to church. You go back, and there's no mask in Shirley's car, and then you come in. And, oh, well, that's part of life, isn't it? The Bible reading this morning will be from Ruth, chapter 4, verses 9 through 15, I believe, or 12. Then Boaz said to the elders and all the people, "You are witnesses this day that I have brought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech, and all that belonged to Chilion and to Mahlon, also Ruth to Moabite, the widow of Mahlon. I have brought to be my wife, to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among the brothers and from the gate of the native place. You are witnesses this day." Then all the people who were at the gate and the elders said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, who together build up the house of Israel. May you act worthily in Ephrath and be renowned in Bethlehem. And may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring that the Lord will give you by this young woman." Was that through 15, Mike?
15, yeah.
Okay. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became the wife. And he went into her, and the Lord gave her conception. And she bore a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer. And may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons, has given birth to him." Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse. And the woman of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, "Son has been born to Naomi." They named him Obed, and he was the father of Jesse, the father of David.
Do a couple extra verses
there. Okay. That won't hurt a thing. In our study of the women who are listed in the genealogy of Jesus, we now come to the study of Ruth. And as was indicated in the verses that Brother Jim read for us, Ruth is the great-grandmother of King David. In her addition to her place in this genealogy, she's also noteworthy as being only one of two women who have books of the Bible named after them, the other, of course, being Esther. And since we have the book of Ruth and occasionally study it, and I think it's used for children's stories as well in the Bible classes, it's perhaps Ruth, other than Mary herself, is probably the best known of these five women that are listed in the genealogies. And so we're going to look briefly at this story, try to summarize it in just a few minutes here. But one of the things that I would point out as we begin is that the story of Ruth, as it unfolds in the book bearing her name, is sheathed in the customs of that place and that time and the Old Testament teachings concerning a number of things. And so we bear that in mind, then we look first at what we would call the backstory, the story of Ruth before the events happen that are the principal subject matter of the book of Ruth. And that involves her family, her father-in-law named Elimelech, and his family, his wife Naomi and the two sons Mahlon and Chilion leave Israel during a time of a famine. And this is, of course, in the time of the judges. And during their time in Moab, they go to Moab to escape the famine. We're told in the book of Ruth they lived there 10 years. And during that time, a great number of things happen. Both of the sons marry Moabite women. Then Elimelech himself dies. And then ultimately, Elimelech dies. And then the sons both die. So that leaves Naomi with two surviving daughter-in-laws. And so Naomi makes the decision that it's best for her to return to Bethlehem. And if we understand the culture of that time, a married woman was in the care of her husband. If she had sons and the husband died, unless she remarried under the customs of that day, then her sons would be responsible for her. And this was both a matter of responsibility, but it was also very important to the inheritance. Because when the children of Israel entered the land of Canaan and the land was divided by the tribes, then by the families, down to the individuals, one of the things that was set forth in the law of Moses is what's called the year of Jubilee. And that is that every 50 years the land returned to the original family that inherited it. And so the importance of having a husband, the importance of having sons, was important both for the provision for the daily living of a woman, but also the matter of the inheritance to her family. So what we find here in the very first part of the book of Ruth is that Naomi, in essence, frees her daughter-in-laws to return to their parents' families. This is something that is totally foreign to our culture. A woman married, her father paid a price, a dowry, to the one she was marrying, basically paying him to take the responsibility for the woman off of his hands. And as far as they were concerned, and modern women find a lot in Ruth to be objectionable, because when you read through the book of Ruth, Ruth is treated as property. Which in their day and in their culture, that's exactly what she was. Elimelech had paid her father for her for his son. And she became a part of his possession, just as the sons and the family were in a patriarchal society. And so what Naomi does is she frees her daughter-in-laws from that obligation. She is basically telling them, you can go back to your father. We're not going to repay him what he paid, but you can go back. That reference is there. And if you notice in Ruth 1 and 11, there's a reference to the custom of levirate marriage, which we talked about in the study on Tamar, where that when a man died, it came to his brother the responsibility to take that wife and also raise up children to his brother. And you find that reference there. She says, I'm not going to be able to bear any more sons who could be your husbands. Go back to your father and let him make a new deal for you, is the way we might say, let him find you a husband or take you in to his house. And so Orpah does return to Moab. And I had this thought. I don't know, this is totally immaterial, but I was wondering if that's where like Ophrah Winfrey's name came from, just a corruption of Orpah, since people used to like to name biblical names. She returns, but Naomi doesn't. And so that results in one of the most misused passages of Scripture in all the Old Testament. And that's Ruth 1:16 and 17. I have been to weddings. where this passage of Scripture is used as a part of the wedding. And it really has nothing to do with a wedding, but this very famous statement by Ruth in Ruth 1 and verse 16, "Do not urge me to leave you or turn back from following you where you go. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Thus may the Lord do to me and worse, if anything but death parts you and me." That's a wonderful sentiment. But, you know, in context, a husband is not saying that to a wife or a wife to a husband. A woman is saying that to her mother-in-law. And I have to admit that when I hear that in a wedding, I think, does he really realize what he's saying? He's not talking to his wife. He's talking to his about-to-be mother-in-law. Will he make that commitment, you know? But what we find in the passage is this expression of the devotion that Ruth has for her mother-in-law. She had become a part of Naomi's family. And even though Naomi was freeing her, she was not accepting that. She said, "I have a commitment to you. I am going to be loyal to you." And so Ruth returns with Naomi. And our focus is on Ruth. And so I'm going to call Naomi, Naomi, all the way through the study this morning. One of the other things that's in here is the changing of Naomi's name to Mara, based upon her sorrow. But we're focusing on Ruth this morning. And so they get back to Bethlehem. And while they still own the land, or Naomi still owns the land that belonged to her husband and her sons, the land, they are poor. They do not have husband and sons to provide for them. And so what we find is that Ruth needs to go and glean in the fields to provide food for them. And this custom of gleaning is the Old Testament welfare system. And it's found in Leviticus chapter 19, there in chapter 19 and verse 9. Moses says, "Now when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap the corners of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest." That is the stuff that falls to the ground as a natural part of the harvesting process. "Nor shall you glean your vineyard." When they took the grapes out of the vineyard, they could only go through one time and harvest the vineyard. "You shall leave them for the needy and for the stranger. I am the Lord your God." An example of this in the New Testament is, you remember the story of Jesus and his disciples walking through, and they just plucked somebody's grain out of their field. Strangers were allowed to take what they needed to eat at that particular time. The poor were allowed to go and to work as harvesters, following the harvesters of the person who owned the field and picking up what they missed, what fell to the ground, and that's how they provided for themselves. And so we find that Ruth does that, and she ends up gleaning in the fields of a relative of her father-in-law's, a man by the name of Boaz. And Boaz there takes notice of Ruth. As the story goes on, we find that Ruth is still a young woman. So a fairly young widow. And Boaz takes notice of her, and in Ruth chapter 2 and verse 11, Boaz says to her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge." And at this point, Boaz treats her differently than they would have treated the normal gleaners who were there working on their own. He allows her to eat with his servants, the food that he provides his servants to sustain them during their work of the harvest. And furthermore, he goes to his servants and basically tells them to drop extra. You know, instead of saying, "Be very careful with your harvest, Make sure we get as much of this as we can. He basically tells them to intentionally leave stuff for Ruth. And so he begins to address the needs of Ruth and Naomi by making sure that there is going to be plenty for them. So when Ruth returns back home to Naomi and tells her everything that has happened, Naomi recognizes that this is really an opportunity for Ruth, that this way that Boaz has noticed her, the way he has treated her, and she tells him, Ruth, that Boaz is a near kinsman to the family. And so what this tells me is that the Jews had developed the idea of the inheritance and levirate marriage and basically had expanded it. While in the law of Moses, it only addressed, in terms of a wife, the brothers. In terms of the other property, it addressed what would happen if a man died and his sons died. It started talking about his brothers, and then it extended it out to cousins, whoever might be related in order to keep the inheritance going in the family. And so evidently, by this time, the application of that was that they basically applied all of that even to the matter of marriage to a woman. And so she lets Ruth know that Boaz is a near kinsman. And she encourages Ruth to just don't go find another field. He's taken an interest in you. As long as you can, you work in his fields. The indication in the text is that she worked through the barley harvest, which was first, and all the way through the wheat harvest and gleaned from the fields that belonged to Boaz. And then Naomi encourages Ruth to approach Boaz to redeem the inheritance of Elimelech. And so here's things again that we would not necessarily have an appreciation for or an understanding of, because basically she tells Ruth to get herself all cleaned up to go, and after the harvest of that day, after Boaz has eaten and drunk and has gone to bed for the night, to then go and lay at his feet and uncover his feet. And so this becomes a controversial aspect in the minds of many to the book of Ruth. In our study of Tamar, we noticed that Tamar presented herself as a prostitute to deceive her father-in-law Judah in order to get the son that he had promised he would provide through his youngest son. In the case of Rahab, she was actually a working prostitute who believed in God and who helped the children of Israel as they were entering the land of Canaan. And so this custom here has caused many commentators to suggest that Ruth was a morally questionable woman as well. And yet that kind of contradicts with what Boaz has already said about her, about how well respected she is and how highly she is thought of. And so I think the answer is no, that there's probably nothing questionable about Ruth does here. We just have trouble understanding the custom. Naomi gives her instructions to Ruth in chapter 3 and verse 4. It shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do. And so Naomi respects Boaz that he will respond appropriately to the approach that Ruth makes to him. And so under the custom of the levirate marriage and the customs of Israel, Ruth is actually making herself known to Boaz, indicating her willingness to submit to him. The Zondervan Bible Dictionary says it was actually the marriage proposal of a woman to a near kinsman who said, "You have the right to redeem me, and I want you to redeem me. And when you look at Ruth 3 and verse 9, he said, who are you? And she said, I am Ruth, your maid, so spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative. And so she basically said, take me into your family. Take me into your bed, as it would be. Make me your wife, because you are my near kinsman. But what we find here is that Boaz is a very honorable person. And so he informs Ruth, and this is honorable not just towards Ruth, this is honorable towards the customs of the land, because he says, there's someone else who is a closer relative. And so under the law and the custom, that closer relative would be in the position to claim the right of redemption. And so he says, I am willing, but there is someone closer, and they must be made aware of this. And so you just stay here, and we'll take care of this tomorrow. And so he acts honorably both to her and to this kinsman that we don't know anything other about, but that he was a closer relative to Elimelech than Boaz was. And so chapter 4, which is where I, from about chapter 3, 14, on through the passage that I had Brother Jim read as our Bible reading, is the story of Boaz and Ruth as they Boaz makes this arrangement. So he approaches the closer relative and tells him, Naomi has the property of Elimelech and the two sons that have died, and she wants to sell it to the Redeemer. Let the Redeemer take it over and be a part of their property. But when he does that, he says, now understand that Ruth, the widowed bride of one of the sons, is part of that property. So if you take the land, you're also taking the wife. And it gives us some insight into how those customs would have worked. But in this case, that nearer relative says that would, he wasn't interested in giving a child to somebody else's inheritance. He says that'll destroy. He wanted his inheritance for his children. And so he refuses. And so Boaz then, once the closer redeemer rejects his right of redemption, Boaz is able to marry Ruth. He redeems the inheritance. So all of Naomi and all of her properties become his. But along with that, Ruth becomes his wife. And they are married. And then they have the child that is mentioned, who is the grandfather of King David. It's affirmed repeatedly in conclusion then in the book of Ruth that she was a woman of excellence, as it says in Ruth chapter 3 and verse 11. The inclusion of Ruth along with Rahab, I think in the genealogy of Christ is somewhat of an affirmation, even at the very start of the gospel stories, that the Messiah was not just a man for the Jews. God included a Canaanite woman and a Moabite, a descendant of Lot, in the ancestry of Jesus. And he is the Son of God who brings salvation to all men of every race and every nation. And Ruth is a very interesting part of that story. I believe Brother Tommy has the prayer, and after that prayer we'll be dismissed to our Bible classes.